This is the LZR Project, an episodic story series by David N. Alderman. The LZR Project takes place within David's Expired Reality universe and serves as a prequel to the main novels in his Expired Reality series. The LZR Project is produced by the Crossover Alliance Publishing Company. Episode number 7. Thursday, April 15th, 1998. The hemline is a bit short, Rachel Holloway explained, handing the neatly folded costume to Sybil Corbin, but I'm sure your boots will cover the gap. Sybil took the black and purple costume, handing it gingerly as if it were a crystal heirloom. I really appreciate this, Rach. I'm sorry that I don't have the money to pay you for this. Rachel shrugged. We're friends, Sib. If you ever get the chance to pay me someday, great. If not, no biggie. Besides, this piece gave me some more practice. Sybil stared at her friend for a moment. The young girl's hair was filled with different colored rhinestones that sparkled underneath the fanlight. You can't tell anyone about this. You know that, right? Rachel nodded. I know. What about your brother, David? Especially not him, Sybil answered, setting the costume down on the coffee table. I thought... Never mind. Rachel waved her thought away. What? Sybil asked. Rachel shrugged. I thought you wanted the costume to be black and purple because those are the colors of the LZR project. I thought you were joining your brother. Sybil sighed. I wish. Unfortunately, my idiot brother doesn't want my help. I already asked, a half dozen times. So, she glanced at the costume, I have to take matters into my own hands. Be careful, Rachel said. Sybil nodded and embraced Rachel in a hug. I will. Thank you so much. I'll make sure you're paid. Eventually. Rachel took her purse from the small bookcase and opened the front door. Your brother isn't so bad, you know. He's just looking out for you. Sybil put on a fake smile and nodded. Sure, thanks. Rachel started down the sidewalk path that led to the parking lot as Sybil shut the door and locked it. She grabbed the costume off the coffee table, releasing it from its folds as it fell out into multiple parts. The tunic, gloves, and mask were made of black spandex, while the tights and cape were crafted of the same material, only in dark purple. Sybil set the costume elements across the coffee table. Perfect, she whispered. She quickly pulled off her t-shirt and sweats and threw the garments on the couch. Then she unclasped her bra and slid her underwear to the ground. Standing in her living room in the nude, Sybil forced her eyes closed and conjured the memory of her rape. The man came into view, his hands twice as big as his head. She knew he was disproportionate, but she was basing the memory on her perspective the night of the incident. His massive hands, like the cleaning pads in a car wash, slapped her body, swiping her clothes off. When she was finally naked, her attacker settled her body into a puddle of cold rainwater. Chills across her back forced her eyes open, and Sybil suddenly realized that she had left the sliding glass door open a crack. She quickly shut the door, pulled the blinds, and peered through two of the vertical blinds to make sure nobody had seen her. She saw nothing more than a darkened parking lot void of life. Sybil stepped into the purple tights and pulled them to her waist. They fit tightly, almost too tightly, but she figured they might stretch a bit once she wore them in. She slipped the black tunic over her chest, pulling on the bottom of it until it fit completely over her breasts and stomach. The black gloves went on next. She noticed they weren't made of spandex like the rest of her outfit, but a thinner material that would hopefully allow her to operate her electronic equipment, such as her GPS unit and cell phone, while she traveled through the city. The purple cape lent a nice accent to the whole ensemble as it was large enough to wrap around her whole body. Once dressed in her outfit, Sybil then pulled on the mask, which covered the top half of her face from her forehead to her nose. She went into the restroom and looked at herself in the mirror. Her long blonde hair flowed across her shoulders and around her mask, lending her face a cape of its own. The rest of the costume attached to her body like paint, hugging every curve her thin frame could throw at it. She stretched her arms above her head and stretched her legs out, nearly doing a split. When she had finished testing out the flexibility of her new costume, she grinned at her reflection. She knew her brother was going to regret leaving her behind in the dust. She hated when he had left her out of the loop when the laser blades first met up, and she hated it even more now that she was older and experienced enough to help him. Sybil went to the refrigerator and took out a bottle of Signature 8. She poured a shot glass of the heavy tonic and then downed it in one gulp. Bitter and sweet, the taste lingered in her throat long after she swallowed. Once the buzz kicked in, she slammed her hand down on the counter and pointed to a photograph that rested in a dark mahogany frame near her toaster oven. The image was of her and her brother in their younger years, in a tight embrace at a no-name playground in Marana. It was a picture of youth, of innocence, of the way her older brother used to protect her before he met his stupid friends, before he became Anaisha's greatest hero. I'll show you. I'll show you I can do what you do, only better. I'll be the one protecting you this time. I'll be the one watching over your shoulder this time. I'll make sure Mr. Big leaves you alone. I'm not your little victim's sister anymore. No. No, not anymore. No, this is when I get to shine. She slammed the picture down face first on the counter and then grabbed her black boots from the bedroom. She hopped around the apartment while she attempted to shove her feet into them. Then she went to the small bookcase by the front door and took her cell phone, GPS unit, and a small compartment shaped like a disc and slid them into a small black backpack which she slung over her shoulder. She closed up the apartment and scurried through the dark parking lot to her heavily tinted four-door sedan, hoping no eyes caught sight of her skulking around in her new costume. At first, the engine wouldn't start. Sybil pressed on the brake, turned the key, and began cursing in her baby babble language she used to curse in as a child. It was a made-up language her and David had conversed in when they were younger, but David claimed to remember none of it nowadays, while Sybil remembered every single word. "Busha Rayanda Feral," she shouted, slamming her fists against the steering wheel, hoping to get away from the apartment before her boyfriend, Nicholas, came home from work. She was about to pull the keys from the ignition when she realized a car was in drive. She quickly shifted it into park and turned the key. The engine started with a confident roar. Unsure of where exactly she should start her nightly patrol, Sybil fumbled with her GPS unit in an attempt to activate the homing beacon she had placed on David's boomerang the last time she visited his apartment. Once a flashing blue beacon indicating David's position appeared on the small LCD screen, she realized that he was currently in the middle of downtown Lysalis, near the Pleasure District. "Oh, what I wouldn't give to catch you in that place," she thought to herself. The great David Corbin paying hookers for cheap sex. That would be enough to bring anyone down a few notches, especially Anaisha's greatest hero. Sybil pulled out of the parking spot and headed straight for Lysalis. It took her a good half hour to get there, and another 15 minutes to get through to the Pleasure District. She didn't care to go into the center of the Pleasure District, not looking the way she did. Instead, she parked her car in a vacant alley lot, and after making sure nobody was around, used the fire escape ladder on the side of a nearby apartment building to scale the structure and get to the rooftop without being seen. Her backpack added an uncomfortable weight at first, but she figured she would have to get used to it if she wanted to carry around the goodies that Squirrel, her technologies expert, had procured for her. Sybil pulled herself up over the ledge of the rooftop, tired from the climb. She forced herself to her feet and made her way to the edge of the roof where she caught a full view of the Pleasure District. Red and pink neon lighting buzzed throughout the 3 to 4 blocks that made up the district. The smell of incense and candles rose up out of the streets below, filling Sybil's head with a nauseous overdose of fragrance. She had been to the Pleasure District a few times before, once when she wanted to see if she could try her hand at such things to earn a bit of money. The girls in this district were at times distinguished and at other times like vicious animals, ripping each other apart, claiming territory that wasn't really even theirs to begin with. The tall building across the street had a neon lady hanging onto the side of it, dressed in a pink bra and pink skirt. Her legs moved back and forth, performing some kind of scissor cut around the word climax. She scanned the street below, her vision passing over the slew of prostitutes and pimps that littered the district, until she found David, Carrie, and Veronica. They were making their way into climax, but Sybil couldn't guess as to why. The place was a dubé, which someone had told Sybil long ago meant passion house in some wasteland language that nobody spoke anymore. Sybil waited until David and his friends were inside the building before she headed back to the ladder to pursue them. She stopped halfway down the ladder when she caught sight of Sean moving down the street in the opposite direction of his friends, toward the industrial district. Sybil debated on who to follow. She wanted to keep an eye on David, maybe even catch him red-handed in some embarrassing act. But she also wanted to go where the real trouble was going to be. Sean was alone, and if he ran into a spot of trouble, it would be the perfect opportunity for her to show off the fighting techniques she had been studying. She slid down the remainder of the ladder, grateful for the smooth fabric of the gloves. When she reached the ground, she raced past her car and through an alley, coming out the other side just after Sean passed the mouth of her dark corridor. Sybil did her best to stay in the shadows. She ducked behind overflowing garbage cans and vomiting dumpsters while she held her nose against the vile smells, determined not to let Sean know she was in pursuit. Because they were close to the border of the industrial district and away from the heavily populated Passion District, Sybil found it easy to stay out of the line of sight of most everyone. Those who did catch a glimpse of her skulking around in her cape and tights said nothing, only offered a genuine stare. When Sybil and Sean crossed over into the industrial district, the shift was like transitioning from night to day. Leaving behind the neon and the stench of incense, They entered streets awash in amber lighting and the unmistakable scent of gasoline and machinery. Because much of Lysalis had become dependent on outside manufacturers like Silvertech Industries, Creo, and Cirque, the industrial district consisted of vacant factories and massive warehouses where illegal contraband was usually found. Sybil followed Sean to one particular warehouse, Warehouse 5.5. He rapped on the massive metal door and was led inside by a tall man in a gray turtleneck. When the door shut, Sybil rushed around to the side of the building and began searching for a ladder. To her dismay, there were no ladders, but instead stacks of crates that led to the roof of the building. She precariously climbed these crates, careful with her footing so as to not slip and injure herself, or alert those inside of her presence there. She climbed her way onto the roof. Panels of clear glass formed a long skylight that allowed the blue moonlight to wash across the innards of the warehouse. She carefully knelt near one of these and pulled out the small disc-shaped compartment from her backpack. Inside were a pair of headphones attached to a quarter-sized black silicone disc, which she set against the glass to hear the sounds within the warehouse. "You're late," a man's voice grumbled. "Sorry, I was busy babysitting my team," Sean replied. "You sure it wasn't the other way around?" "Screw you, Dinkweed. Your mercenary friend Drather approached me again last night. This constitutes as harassment now, you know. I would almost swear he has a crush on me." "Make sure you shut that smart mouth of yours around the boss," the man's voice said, "else he'll make sure I get the pleasure of rearranging your face." "Look, I don't have all night. Any minute now, my friends are going to realize I'm gone, and then I'm going to have to come up with some elaborate excuse as to why I ditched them in the pleasure district." "Why are your friends in the P district? Getting a little..." "Stop," Sean said. "Just stop. Just let me talk to Big, or I'm walking out of here." "I'm here, Sean." Sybil recognized the voice almost immediately as that of Mr. Big. She had seen the man on numerous television specials, and she had had her own run-in with Mr. Big when she was younger. David rescued her from the clutches of that fat slob. That was when David was her hero, not the city's hero, not the world's hero. "Why do you keep sending your sidekick to bother me?" Sean asked. "I already told you I want nothing to do with your offer to join your pathetic pirate crew over here." "Then why are you here now?" "To tell you to stop it or else." "Sean," Mr. Big said, "I would like to think I have become exceptionally good at reading people. I try not to read what you say, but what you do. And by coming here, you have shown me that you have interest in my offer."
"I'm out of here."
"Yes," Mr. Big said, "I know. But first let me tell you what I have to offer you. You want weapons, right? You want the city to be armed? You want the city to be protected? Not really from the likes of me, but from those more dangerous than me? Maybe Mr. Nokiai? Maybe worse." "I believe everyone has the right to defend themselves," Sean answered. "David doesn't feel that way. He thinks guns are the plague." "Yes, I had hoped to change his mind about that by now, but your friend David is a very stubborn individual. Nonetheless, you are here now, and I have a deal to make with you. You run one of my black market operations, gun runner, really, and I'll give you 20% of all weapons that come across the channel, plus 30% of the profit and credits." "Where do you think I'm going to put these weapons you want to give me?" Sean asked. "I live in a house, with my sister and my parents." "I'll give you space in my warehouse, so you'll get storage, guns, and credits. What more could you want? Not to mention how close you are to the Pleasure District." Sean huffed. "I don't care about the P District, okay?" He remained silent for what felt like hours to Sybil. He finally let out a long breath and said, "Fine." Sybil's heart sank. She glanced up at the blue moon above, wondering if her brother was even the least bit smart enough to figure out that he had a traitor on his team. "Very good," Mr. Big said. "Very good indeed. You will be working with Drather on this and..." "No," Sean shouted. "No, I'm not going to be working with anyone. This is my project, my reins. Drather has the connections you will need. Drather will be working with you. Don't worry, you are still in charge of the market. You'll just have Drather there to help you with the logistics and security." Sean huffed. "If David or the rest of my team even breathe in a word of this, I'll come back and kill you with my bare hands." Mr. Big chuckled lightly. "Sean, I am not a man to be threatened. If you want to doubt my associates, such as Drather, go ahead. You have full license to do so. But do not doubt my word. My word is my soul, and to give you my words is to give you myself. Do not think I take promises and deals lightly. This bargain we are making will benefit both of us. There will be no need for me to let your team know what you are doing. You are simply moonlighting, nothing more. They just wouldn't approve of the employer you have chosen to moonlight with." "Contact will be strictly through my cell number," Sean said,
which I will have bounced to a disposable phone. I wouldn't have it any other way. Sybil packed up her eavesdropping equipment and sat on the roof, her mind reeling with what she had just heard. Her brother's teammate, friend, had just made an alliance with one of the most dangerous criminals in all of Anera. Sybil was at first inclined to tell David right away. She wanted to call him on her cell phone and tell him to get out of Climax so she could shock him into action. Instead, she realized the information she had was invaluable and shouldn't be squandered. "I'll wait," she told herself. "I'll wait until David is at his highest point. Wait until victory is just within his grasp, and then I'll hand him the news of Sean's betrayal. It'll be like handing him a live grenade. It will blow him down a few notches below me and allow me to stand tall for once and reap in the benefits I've been denied all these years." Thank you for listening to the LZR Project. If you are interested in reading more of David Alderman's Expired Reality series, please check out thecrossoveralliance.com and make sure to check out the author's website at davidnalderman.com.